Time to talk politics.
We will not tolerate unparliamentary conduct. I will not tolerate heckling.
It's Tasha's political panel.
It is indeed. And on the panel this week, Sally Hauser, senior consultant at Navigator Limited, Lisa Kinsella, managing partner of Daisy Consulting Group, and Jamie Ellerton, principal at Canaptus Limited. Good afternoon, everyone.
Hey, Tasha.
Hi, Tasha.
Hi, Tasha.
All right. You know what? There's so much to chew on in this election. There's a week and a day to go. The mud's flying from the Liberals. The Liberals are flying in the poll. The NDP, rather, are flying in the polls. And the Tories, well, until a few moments ago, were kind of flying by the seat of their pants when it came to their platform. But Jamie, I'm going to start with you on this. There seems to be some more meat on the bones here, looking at their website. But I still don't see some final numbers. Do you think that this is hurting them, the lack of platform, and are they going to wise up before the big day?
Yeah, I think that's a fair critique, Tasha. This is something that's kind of dogged them for the past little while. If you look at every kind of announcement that they made throughout this campaign, there has been a costed figure attached to them, but in terms of a comprehensive accounting for it all, that's something that continues to dog them. But I think if you look at how they're offering $173 for the average family saving on their hydro bill, $222 for the gas price by lowering the provincial gas taxes by 10 cents and stuff like that, those individual things have been what's resonating, and I personally look forward to reading Plan for the People a little later this afternoon or tonight.
There you go. Well, I think, you know, those things may resonate, but do they tell the full picture, Sally? You know, the NDP's been harping on this a lot, though they had a huge hole in their platform as well. Is it a case of pot calling the kettle black here?
Well, you know, I don't think so at all. If you're going to talk about holes in platforms, I mean, with one of the most glaring things in this non-platform, really, that was being released today, there's no fiscal framework and no timeline to ever balance the budget, no path to balance. You know, and he just, this entire campaign, Doug Ford has been going out just kind of wildly pulling numbers out of his hat. And it's like the media asked him a question. He's like, yeah, sure, we're going to do that. You know, there's no way this whole talk of conservatives being so fiscally responsible, and we don't see that in any way, shape, or form in this respect. You know, there's no real plan about where his $6 billion in cuts are going to come from outside of just saying efficiencies. And even with that, the cost of his, you know, of his tax cut, as well as the cost of these kind of wild spending plans that he's been saying over the whole course of the election, doesn't add up in any way, shape, or form. So, I mean, I guess they were under pressure, you know, 1 week from election day to actually put something out there. But when you look at it, even scratch the very, very surface, it really isn't a fiscal plan at all.
Yeah, it's got, like I said, some numbers, but does not have a bottom line, Lisa. But clearly they're trying to stem some of the bleeding here that's happened. The NDP support's risen, though. I don't know if it's really at the expense of the Tories. It seems to be more at the expense of the Liberals, because the latest poll has Liberal support at 17%, according to Angus Reid. Where do the Liberals go in the last week of this election? I mean, how can they save the furniture, as the Liberal, the political conversation goes?
Well, I mean, they have, I mean, that's all they have left at this point. I think the Liberals, they're basically trying to make sure that they retain official party status. As you know, if you get fewer than a certain number of seats, you don't even be considered an official party. And if that happens to the Ontario Liberal Party, I mean, it's just absolutely going to be devastating to the once, you know, great party that it was under successive leaders previously. And we've seen now what's happened in the last few weeks of this campaign, that I think everyone kind of underestimated, one, how much Kathleen Wynne was disliked, two, how poorly her campaign team would be advising her. You know, I think we all saw the sorry, not sorry ad. I think it was a huge mistake. We also underestimated how strong of a candidate Andrea Horvath was going to be. Out of the three, I think she has been the most premier-like. And of course, yes, now we've seen this so-called platform by the Ontario Progressive Conservative Party. And Jamie, don't worry, if you're going to read it tonight, you just need to take a few minutes.
It won't take long. No, it's true.
It won't take long. I mean, it's really a bunch of sound bites without a bunch of ideas, with just, you know, just kind of a couple of Doug ideas, I think, where they came up with a few things that they think the average Ontarian will say, yeah, I want to do that, without being able to say this is how we're going to do that. So everyone has some problems here. But I also want to say, I think people aren't being necessarily honest with their voter intention. I think we're going to see some huge surprises on June 7th.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll get into our fearless predictions then. And you know what? You're not the first person I've heard say this. Some people say that the conservative vote, Jamie, is not as high as is tracking the polls because some people just don't want to admit they're voting for Doug Ford. I've heard this, that they, you know, they'll vote PC, but they don't want to say it. Do you anticipate a ballot box bounce for him or not?
Yeah, I think we've seen that in the past as well in terms of people being less likely to tell pollsters they're going to vote conservative and kind of show up on election day. We even saw that in 2011, which was the Stephen Harper strong, stable national majority government win, where pollsters weren't quite capturing what was there until the very last minute. I think if you look at kind of the change of what's being put forth between the NDP and the Ontario PCs, the kind of bringing relief to families message is something that's going to resonate. And while Doug Ford's likability numbers might be dropping and not maintaining where they were compared to what Andrea Horvath has, and the actual desire and sentiment for change, it continues to fuel that. And when you look at the bench strength of the Ontario PCs with people like Kristyn Elliott, like Rod Phillips, like Vic Fedeli, and how they resonate very differently in different pockets of Ontario, that bench strength, I think, is going to help give us a bump on election day to help pull.
Yeah, I don't know if it's the bench. I'm not sure about that as opposed to fatigue with the current government and people who don't want to see more spending. Because I don't think, you know, Vic Fedeli, like, they're not household names all over the province. I hate to say it, even though they're there, people don't pay that much attention. They pay attention to the leader. And in this case, Andrea Horvath, Sally, she's very popular. At the same time, there's another poll out that says a growing number of Ontarians want a majority government. A new Ipsos poll says that people want a majority. They don't want a minority. They don't want uncertainty. 58% of Ontarians want a majority. Is that going to hurt or help the NDP? Because 43% say they want a PC majority, 39% an NDP majority. Could people be scared a bit of an NDP majority government? Sally.
Yeah, you know, I think it's fun for all of us who are kind of, you know, politically engaged and politicos to be talking majority, minority and stuff like that. I don't know that that super resonates with the population at large, you know, even in kind of a poll like that. You know, and I don't necessarily think that that affects people when they go to the polls on.
You don't think I think strategic voting is a thing in this election. I do. I think people are, you know, they don't want one or the other candidate to get in, so they may vote for someone else just to block them.
Yeah, I think strategic voting, absolutely. I think it's very much, you know, kind of Doug Ford or not Doug Ford is the strategy there. But in terms of, somebody doing the calculations themselves, going to the poll booth and saying, okay, if I vote this person, are we more likely to get a majority or minority? I don't really know that that figures into it a whole lot.
Okay, Lisa, what do you think? I mean, it seems to me if people want a majority, it's the Liberals who get squeezed. It could go either way, NDP or PC, but the Liberal Party would be the loser in that scenario. Lisa, are we having issues with our phones? I don't know. If Lisa, can you hear me? She's gone. Maybe the Liberals needed her to do some more work. I wouldn't be surprised, quite frankly, because like I said earlier, the polls show the Liberals are at 17%. But Jamie, I'll ask you the question then in terms of who benefits from a situation like that. Because if the PCs had a minority, I mean, the PCs, you know, Stephen Harper also used this line back in 2011, give us a majority or else none of our plans will come to fruition. If the PCs have a minority, they won't be able to get a heck of a lot done because they'd have two parties who disagree with them.
Yeah, and I think one of the things you've seen consistently across polling from various polling companies is the kind of commitment of Ontario PC voters and those leaning that way in terms of showing up to vote. The Liberals started this campaign trying to make this a referendum about Doug Ford, and Andrea Horvath and the NDP kind of continued that. But when you look at kind of the scandal of the candidates and the kind of questions of can they actually govern facing the NDP and the kind of stuff they've had to, the headwinds they've faced on those issues in recent days, it really calls into question the kind of typical Liberal voters. Will they be motivated to even show up? With 51% generally, I think, was the turnout in the last provincial election. If that number drops a little further and there's a more motivated PC base coming out to vote, that bodes well for the PCs. And so I think one of the things to watch is do Liberal voters show up at the ballot box?
Lisa, are they going to show up? Is this going to be we're just going to sit it out rather than vote for someone else election?
Well, I think potentially, a lot of people could end up staying home, you know, kind of a pox on all their houses, because everyone has a problem. You have the Ontario New Democrats who had to defend the question on unions, and Kathleen Wynne did an extremely great job on that during the last debate. So you have that issue for the NDP and some other issues that the Liberals are trying to attack them with today. The Liberals have the problem with likability and change, and the PCs have the problem of Doug Ford and this non-platform platform. So I think there could be a whole bunch of people staying home. A lot of, you know, Kathleen Wynne's been targeting millennials, specifically with that last recent ad, but they typically don't come out and vote. So it'll really be come down to get out the vote on E-Day and which party is best positioned to get their supporters to the polls, off the couch and out the door.
Out the door, that's right. Well, listen, something that has gone out the door in the last day has been our tax dollars. We're going to come back and talk about Trans Mountain and the $4.5 billion that taxpayers are going to be spending to buy a pipeline that wasn't really for sale. Stay tuned for more of our political panel on Global News Radio 640 Toronto.
Time to talk politics.
We will not tolerate unparliamentary conduct. I will not tolerate heckling.
It's Tasha's political panel.
Welcome back for the second half of our panel. Sally Hauser, senior consultant at Navigator Limited, Lisa Kinsella, managing partner of Daisy Consulting Group, and Jamie Ellerton, principal at Canaptus Limited, on the line with us. And next topic is the Trans Mountain Pipeline. Yesterday, Finance Minister Bill Morneau announced that Canadians, through the government, will be buying this pipeline. We're all going to be shareholders now. $4.5 billion. Wow. Okay. Here's an excerpt from the press conference where he made that announcement yesterday.
To guarantee the summer construction season for the workers who are counting on it and to ensure the project is built to completion in a timely fashion, the federal government has reached an agreement with Kinder Morgan to purchase the existing Trans Mountain pipeline and the infrastructure related to the Trans Mountain expansion project.
Oh, God. Okay, Lisa, I'm going to start with you because, you know, some people said they saw this coming. But really, really, this pipeline wasn't for sale. Money wasn't really the issue. Protests were the issue. Political will was the issue. How is throwing all this money at the problem going to solve it?
Well, I think, you know, Trudeau found himself in a damned if you do, damned if you don't type of situation. If May 31st came and went and Kinder Morgan, you know, took their toys from the sandbox and walked away, there would have been this national outrage that this project that the Prime Minister has deemed to be in the national interest, he wasn't able to make it happen. So what he did was the opposite. He decided that he was going to make sure that even if Kinder Morgan walks away, we will be in a position to move forward. And of course, you know, I think what happened is post press conference yesterday, there was some clarification that was coming out of what this sale was. And is Canada actually going to spend $4.5 billion to buy Trans Mountain? And it sounds like what's going to happen is, you know, there's going to be some sort of loan so that we can resume construction, get this moving forward, and eventually Canada will get out of this sale in another way. So I think, you know, Trudeau did what he needed to do. I think it was a show of strength, and he would have been criticized either way. There was no way he was going to come out of this with everyone being happy.
Yeah, well, nobody's really happy. The left is screaming. The environmentalists are threatening to protest more. You know, the opposition parties, opposition conservatives in particular, are saying that this is an outrage. Jamie, has he succeeded in just making everyone mad?
Yeah, I think although none of us will get a vote as a shareholder at an AGM for this newly created Crown Corporation, this is something that will haunt them at the ballot box in 2019. I think Andrew Scheer was rather effective yesterday in kind of detailing how we got to this point. This wasn't something the Prime Minister was reacting to. This was a situation of his own creation. Even I saw in some of the media coverage, Premier Notley's former Oil Sands Advisory Council member, Tsavora Berman, was out railing about how this is going to be the downfall of the Trudeau government and how it's going to cost them votes on the left. And I think this is not something that's ideal for this government going forward. And when you look at issues like this and the small business tax credits last summer, there continue to just be big files that the Liberals are screwing up. And I think it's going to haunt them in 2019.
Okay, Sally, you have two NDP governments at odds over this, one in BC, one in Alberta. Rachel Notley is thrilled about this. She's saying what a great decision it was yesterday, but it's not the case in BC. And it seems to me Trudeau had more at stake politically in BC. So explain to me how the political upside for him in this whole thing, because I don't see it.
Well, I'm going to agree with Lisa, and this was kind of a damned if you do, damned if you don't scenario. Trudeau staked a lot of political capital on being able to get this built. He talked about Rachel Notley's climate leadership in general as being the social license. And it's that idea that, even though we are making all these steps, towards a more environmental sustainability, we still can't get anything built in Canada. So I think in that way, that calculation, I think it may well cost some seats in the Lower Mainland. But you have to, unlike Alberta, where the support for a pipeline is up around over 80%, British Columbians, despite the position of the government, are actually, I think it's somewhere around 55% in favor. So you can't look at British Columbia, despite kind of Premier Horgan, as being homogeneous in its opposition to this. Did Trudeau make anybody happy? The one person that is very happy is Rachel Notley, absolutely. I love the quote, pick those tools back up, folks. We've got a pipeline to build. This is going to get people back to work this summer. And if we didn't have this level of certainty, very, very soon we are going to start to see a whole lot of people losing their jobs, both in British Columbia and in Alberta. So I frankly think it's a good move by the federal government to create that certainty. As a new Democrat, I'm super fan of Crown corporations. So I'm quite pleased for it's certainly the one person who's probably pretty upset is Jason Kenney.
And yeah, you have two of us on the left totally in favor of what Trudeau did.
Yeah, oh boy. All I see here is, it's like it's a bailout, basically, is what it is. And all I see here is money going down the drain. But you know what? We'll wrap this part of the debate up because we got to move on to our last subject where more money could be going down the drain because apparently Donald Trump may be pulling the rug out from his own team on NAFTA. That deadline's coming up, too. And he's apparently using an obscure section of the U.S. Trade Expansion Act, which I didn't even know was a thing, to investigate whether vehicle imports are a threat to national security. Apparently, there was a deal that was almost in hand, and he's changing his mind about what should be in it. It sounds to me, I don't know, Sally, almost like he's trying to torpedo this thing. What's your take on it?
Oh, well, who knows what's in the mind of the master of the art of the deal, frankly, at this point. I feel like every time, I talk about NAFTA on this program and just in general, it's like we're getting close and then we're not. And then there's some other kind of, monkey wrench thrown in. Ultimately, this is what happens when you're not dealing particularly with a rational actor here. I honestly think that, the last person who's in his ear is how he's thinking that day. It's not like he takes a whole bunch of advice and synthesizes it and decides to move forward on the best path. He's got NAFTA mood swings, frankly. So, all I can do, frankly, is sympathize with the Canadian negotiation team. I think they've, to give some kudos to the Liberals, have done a fairly good job maintaining some level of cool with that level of volatility to the south.
Yeah, at the same time, though, Lisa, it's sucking a lot of oxygen out of Ottawa, and I'm wondering if a lot of the other files the Liberals are falling down on, the neglect may be due to the fact they're so wrapped up in NAFTA, and so many resources are going to that. How much of a setback is this for Trudeau?
Well, to Sally's point, like my Labrador Retriever is a better negotiator than Donald Trump and a more rational personality.
What kind of deals does your lab want to strike with you?
Well, right now he's just trying to find more treats, so he's pretty good at it. But, we're dealing with someone who, as Sally says, is not a rational actor, who pretty much watches Fox News and Friends, and that's how he makes his mind up for the day. And the Trudeau team that's in there, they have a very specific team, and Minister Freeland, to her great credit, has worked this file masterfully. She's done a remarkable job, and I've heard that from both New Democratic and Liberal MPs who've told me this, off the record, of course, so I won't name them. But they've done a really good job, and they've done it within this context of a president who seems to take more time deciding what he wants to have for breakfast than he does trying to figure out how to make this NAFTA deal happen. I think it'll happen despite Trump being an idiot most of the time, and that's to the great credit of the people that Prime Minister Trudeau's team is comprised of, and of course the Mexican team as well.
Okay, Jamie, you wrap this up. Do you have as much confidence in Ottawa facing off against Donald Trump in this as Lisa does?
Yeah, so I will give credit to the Trudeau government who have actually handled this file quite well. But I think one of the things that we've kind of consistently seen from Donald Trump, he doesn't like deals and solutions when everyone wins. There has to be a winner and there has to be a loser. And so when you look at what kind of Prime Minister Trudeau was saying back in the middle of May, that it looked like we were close to be a deal that would be good for all three sides, and kind of what we are here, I think that's ultimately one of the sticking points. And what the path forward is anyone's guess. I think you are playing to the president's ego. You have to figure out what is going to be his priority over the next 36 hours and beyond, and how it all interlocks. Throw in the stuff of the North Korean summit, and I think the president himself is also distracted on this, and he's got electoral calculations as it relates to his base who were anti-NAFTA and wanting to be more protectionist as they approach the midterm. So I don't envy Minister Freeland and the position that the government finds themselves in. I think they should be giving kudos for the work they've done this far, but ultimately President Trump's going to do what he's going to do, and we all wait here waiting for the next tweet.
The next tweet. Yeah, well, we'll have to wrap it up on that. We'll be tweeting out your panel later, so watch for that tweet. Want to thank all three of you, Sally Hauser, Lisa Kinsella, and Jamie Ellerton, for joining us today. Have a great afternoon, everyone.